الله أكبر الله.
Haji.
Many years ago, Indian youth would go away in solitude to prepare for manhood. One such youth hiked into a beautiful valley. There he fasted, and on the third day decided to test himself against the mountain. When he reached the top, he could see forever, and his heart swelled with joy. Then he heard a rustle at his feet, and looking down, saw a snake. Before he could move, the snake spoke. "I am about to die. It is too cold for me up here, and I am freezing. There is no food, and I am starving. Put me under your shirt, and take me down to the valley." "Oh, no," said the youth. "I know your kind. You are a rattlesnake. If I pick you up, you will bite me, and I will die." "Not so," said the snake. "I will treat you differently. If you do this for me, you will be special. I will not harm you." The youth withstood for a while, but this was a very persuasive snake with beautiful markings. At last, the youth tucked it under his shirt and carried it down to the valley. There he laid it gently on the grass. When suddenly the snake coiled, rattled, and struck, biting him on the leg. "But you promised," cried the youth. "You knew what I was when you picked me up," said the snake as it slithered away. "You will always be warned when danger is near. The Lord cannot make your decisions for you, but he will always allow you to be aware of what is right when a decision or action is about to be made. Don't allow yourself to ever believe that you are different, in that you can participate in unrighteous activities even just once and not be hurt. Remember, you knew what I was when you picked me up."
Nobody dared to meet him in an open press debate. He was nominated by the folks from every state. Yes, a monkey was the president, though maybe not the first.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, "Get off of my back"?
I just wanna let you know. Yeah, get off of my back and into my game. Get out of my way and out of my brain. Get out of my face. Get your best shot.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds. And if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench. And we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
And here we are. Welcome to The Shooting Bench. It is, what is it? It is the 10th? Yeah. 10th of September. Tomorrow, 9/11. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, takes place. Let me turn this down. That's got to be sounding bad. So maybe that sounds a little bit better. Let me go over and see if we have any sound. You know, my faithful monitors here that always let me know if my... Okay, and then Glock, 5x5. Thank you, sir. Yeah, it's, I've said 17th anniversary. I've said for years, you know, I expect, and a couple of times it has. That's when our deal happened. I think Benghazi was then, wasn't it? There's been a couple of things happen on that anniversary. But I'm still kind of... Still kind of waiting for something a little bit more significant, but I hope it doesn't happen. I hope but this goes on within a normal amount of parades and memorials and whatever they do, and it'll fade off into the sunset, and the next day will be the 12th, and that'll be good. So let's see who we have. Catapon joins us tonight. Welcome, Catapon. And Desert Rat, I haven't seen you for a day or two. And the Tinker, and Doc, and Minnie, and Nan made it in tonight. On time, too. How about that? NM Glock, Northwest Heavy, B-Lady, welcome. And T-Bow, that was, I'm going to play one of those things that you posted on Facebook today. It is that thing by Ted Cruz. I don't know how many's heard it or not heard it, but I thought it was awesome, and I'm going to listen to it again. And we have an anonymous in there. Welcome, whoever you are. I have found out that we have a couple of anonymous that are faithful every show listeners. They just, nobody knows who they are. I found out who one of them was with this survival tab order here the other day. But not only on time, Nan's just in time. Yeah, very good. It must mean you were hustling, make it in there. By the way, all the podcasts are caught up for those of you that are podcast listeners and want to come back, go back and check out some of those. And I still have, I have a few of those flash drives left with, I think there's 800 and some odd shows, 814 shows or something like that, all the way from, shoot, I don't remember now when they started. I think it was the entire length of time for all the Just Measure shows before it became Survival Circle, I believe. I'll have to look at the paper that goes with it and see. Anyway, I've still got a few of those left.
Lots and lots of listening. If you want to take and plug those in while you're in your car on long trips or whatever, there is plenty of listening time there. All right, let me see. Let me click over here and bring some of this stuff up because there is so much stuff tonight. Man, we've been busy beavers tonight trying to get all this stuff together. What happened was I had, instead of putting my computer to sleep, I turned it off and I said, oh, no, it's 15 till and I got to get everything up and running. So it... pushed me right to the limit there. But, all right, hang on a second. There we are. Found it. All right, let's see if we can get back here about to the start, because there is a lot of stuff we need to talk about here. Right there. There'll be a couple of things. I'll have to change formats tonight because there's a couple of things I want you to hear.
Let's see, we talked about the AK going full auto here a couple days ago. I'm not going to play this, but you know, some of you may have already seen it. It was during the Kavanaugh hearings, and there were some protesters, of course, and always is. And that's one of the things I'm going to play tonight is someone that is really puts the protesters in their place. But she wouldn't shut up, and they were trying to get her out of there, and she just wouldn't stop. Typical of a liberal. I've heard, I've played numerous, I hesitate to call them debates because they weren't debates. When the liberal starts talking, there's just no way to shut them up. The one of them in particular, I'd like to find it. Maybe if I remember, I'll try to look for it. It may take me a while, but I'll have it maybe by Wednesday, possibly. But there was I think he was a city councilman or representative or something in Atlanta. And one of the conservative talk show hosts, I think it was on WSL, was trying to talk to him, find out he had run several stop signs, was speeding like 70 miles an hour in 45 mile zones and whatnot. And he just kept going, and the cops followed him for a long ways trying to get him stopped. He wouldn't stop. And the talk show host says, "Why didn't you stop?" And he said this over and over and over and over, and that's all he would say. "I did stop." And the talk show host say, "But you didn't win over there." "But I did stop." And the cop had his lights on. "I did stop." "But you didn't stop when I did stop." And this went on for, geez, I wanted to reach through the radio and choke that guy to death. I couldn't stand it. Went on and on and on, and that's all he said. And that's what liberals do, and that's what this gal was doing. Just would not shut up, would not leave. So this other congressman there, representative, whatever he is, named Billy Long, come to find out he was number three in the state of Missouri for auctioneer. You know, he's the third, one of the top three auctioneers in the state. And he just started doing an auctioneer's call. And it was awesome. He went on. Finally, she was just drowned out and had no choice but to give up. And they escorted her out of the room. So that was funny as hell. You have to kind of watch the video to go along. It doesn't do it justice just to listen to it. All right, let's see here. That's a gun thing. We'll save that till Wednesday. And okay, here we go. This is a real story, true story. I checked numerous sources trying to find something that would lead me to believe that it was satire, but it's not. Florida State A&T both probably heard something about this. Investigation launched after police shootout at a crashed car. Crashed car, that means the car was already stopped. It had crashed into a light pole or something, and it was already stopped. 23 officers fired at least 377 rounds on two unarmed men. Nearly 400 rounds on a car that was stopped, and two guys unarmed sitting in the car, apparently not any threat that anybody could ascertain. Obviously, bad shots as they were, they out of 400 rounds, they did manage to kill the two. They had one of them had robbed a Walgreens and shot a police officer. Okay, now this is where, and this has happened more than once. You remember the guy in California that they run down and they burned the cabin down with him in it and everything. I forgot what his name was. But once you kill a cop, then the Constitution and the law and everything else is thrown out the window because it becomes
at that point, nothing but a retribution, nothing but a get even. He killed a cop. Whatever we got to do, we have to kill him. We can't catch him, and we can't just, try him and all. We have to kill him because we are judge, jury, and executioner, and he needs 377 rounds on two unarmed men. Now, maybe they didn't know they were unarmed, but what point do you stop shooting? Did they just shoot till everybody run out of ammo? That's what it sounds like. Let's see. Let me see what that is here. I'm gonna 377 rounds divided by 23 cops. That's 16 rounds apiece. So I'm saying that I'm guessing that everybody emptied at least one magazine at these guys. 16.4 rounds each. That's insane to me. It's absolutely. I can't even wrap my mind around how or why that happened. And the investigation, I would hope, would be very short. I hope they look at the any video that might be available or any eyewitness accounts and say, you know what? There comes a point where there has to be a stopping point.
The Colin Kaepernick advertisement.
Hold on now, shut up. Thank you. All right. Well, anyway, let's move on here. Yeah, Tebow said he saw that there. Here's a new one. Remember, what was it, 4 or 5 days ago? Oh, it was Labor Day weekend, wasn't it? When there was like 60-some people or whatever it was shot in Chicago in less than 24 hours. Well, here we are right now. This may be a new record. In less than 7 hours, this was on August 6th, less than 7 hours, 41 people shot, 5 fatally. In Chicago. I'm not going to spend any more time on that. We've talked about it. I already know what the cure is. It can be cured. I've got a very, very dear friend that lived in Chicago for quite a while. And obviously he was very liberty-minded and has become even more liberty-minded since he's moved out to this part of the country. He left Chicago first and went to California. And that didn't last long. He was there for just a little while, and he'd come to Arizona. And if he moves again, it'll be to Idaho. But right now, he's not looking like it's going to move. But anyway, what I was getting at is he very faithfully posts or sends me reports from Chicago every weekend. And every weekend, it's the same thing. It's 20, 30, 50, 60 shot, and 2, 3, 5, 7, whatever it is, killed every single weekend.
I don't get it.
All right. this one here. I'm not sure I understand all I know about this one. No, we'll let that one go. Never mind. All right, let's see here. Burt Reynolds, we got that taken care of. Here we go. Remember the girl, I talked about her several times on the show, that very, very faithful student in Farmington. Remember, she was jogging and didn't have her gun and was threatened with rape by a 14-year-old. So there's many, many stories like this. I don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this because it's really not that
newsworthy anymore because this happens regularly. It's a 14-year-old. 14-year-old here, Tyrone Harvin. 14 years old, arrested for murder and rape of an 83-year-old woman. That's another thing that I have a really hard time wrapping my mind around. I don't get it.
The guy that attacked the girl in Farmington was 14. There was another person that I used in my classes quite often when I'm talking about attacks in the home and whatnot. There was an old couple. They were in their 80s in Cuba, New Mexico. And this kid was also 14. And he was, matter of fact, he was a grandson, I believe. And trying to borrow the truck, and they wouldn't let him. And he beat both of them damn near to death. I saw pictures of their faces. They were beat to a pulp. They lived, but, grandson in those, they should have killed him. They should have used, let me rephrase that for the liability-minded here. They should have used whatever force was necessary to bring that to an abrupt and decisive halt. Okay, let's put it that way. There, nobody will be whining and crying about talking ugly about him. So, okay, let's see here. Let's moving right along. There's another one. Another 83-year-old died after a guy had a 23-year-old. Oh, let me back up a little bit to the last one. 14 years old. Again, I just gave you three cases of 14-year-olds. There's numerous cases of many of them starting from, once in a while you hear something as low as maybe 9, several 10-year-olds, lots of 12-year-olds. Once they get past 12, 13, 14, 15, there's tons of stories like this. So the next time you hear something about, why did you shoot him? It was just a child. Well, bring up some of these cases. There are hundreds of cases like this on the internet. Store some links somewhere. Either send an email to yourself or one of your notepad apps or something like that, and put a bunch of links in there. And when some idiot says something like this, say, here's some research. Will you do it? Will you look at it? Is your mind closed so much that you won't look at the facts, look at the truth? Check these out. There's another one, 83-year-old man who was stomped. There was a dreamer, as they call him, stomped on this guy's head nearly 100 times. Killed him, of course, 83 years old, stomped on his head. The guy was 23 years old, and tattoos under both eyes, tattoos all over the place. Said he stomped on the victim's head 74 times and punched him 25 times before leaving his lifeless body in the parking lot. This was in Pasadena, Texas. That's right, just not too far outside of Houston. Matter of fact, Pasadena is where, I don't think they call it that anymore, but there's a big old, one of the biggest, neatest nightclubs in the whole world. It was Mickey Gilley's place. Gilley's is what they called it. I've been there many times, and it was in Pasadena. Anyway, the whole details of this story are pointless, really. Doesn't mean anything. 23-year-old dreamer stomped an 83-year-old man to death. That's really all you need to know. There's no way that was self-defense. At some point in the stomping spree, even if it was a self-defense thing, at some point in that 74 stomps,
the guy had to have given up and not be a threat anymore, if that were the case. It was not the case, I'm just saying. You just don't stomp somebody in the head 74 times and find any means whatsoever to justify that. Just ain't going to happen. So there's, let me find this. See, I think that's it. That's not it. I think I've got it here. Yeah, I've got it. Okay. Yeah, Doc, I'll get to that in just a minute. Let's see. Just kind of going through here in no particular order. Doc, you're going to like this one. Matter of fact, several of you are going to like this one. It's a pretty neat story. Amy, I don't think you heard this story either. There's a Chevrolet dealership in Pierce, Nebraska. And the guy that owned it, and still like most dealers, you know, when it comes to the end of the year and the trucks they can't sell, they send back. I don't know what happens to those. I don't know if they give them to the illegals or sell them to the Afghanis or what the hell they do with them, but turn them into company trucks or whatever. But this guy didn't do that. He saved them. 40 years, he saved his excess inventory at the end of the year. Everything he couldn't sell, he stuck in this huge warehouse. Obviously, he was making good money. He'd been successful with his dealership, and he had he retired in 1996, and he had all these vehicles stashed. Every one of them had less than 5 miles on them. These were cars that go back to 1958 and 60s and 70s and 80s and I don't know how many he had. It doesn't say in here, I don't think, how many cars there actually were, but there was a lot of them. So after 5 decades, he auctioned these cars off. Now, folks, understand what I'm trying to tell you here. These are people that bought brand new, never before owned, except from the dealer. Unblemished, mint condition, 1950s and 60s, 70s automobiles. How awesome would that be? The first vehicle that sold was a sky blue 1958. Doc, you remember these? The Chevy Cameo pickup had 1.3 miles on it. It sold for the most amount of money at $140,000. Another one spent $97,500 on a red and white 1963 Impala this one had 11 miles on it. They'd test driven it a time or two. Manufacturer's plastic on the seat, yellow typewritten window sticker, the original price, $3,254. Sold for $97,000. And anyway, there's a video here that shows, and they some of them were just out sitting in the field. But they were still, other than sun damage to the paint and whatever, they were mint, brand new, never run cars. But a lot of them, it says, unlike his stashed many of his old, yeah, right here it says he stashed many of his unsold cars in a warehouse at his farm and other spots in town if they didn't sell in the first year. So a few of them are in the field, a few of them in the warehouse. So there was still a lot of them that were mint, literally showroom condition. And I think that is freaking awesome right there. So, all right, let's see. Yeah, NM Glock, I'd say he was definitely planning his retirement, and boy, did that work well. That was, how could you have that kind of discipline, though? That guy had to be like some of these people that, you know, work every day of their life and put back every penny and eat bologna sandwiches for 60 years and then they finally retire with millions of dollars. How do you have that kind of discipline? How can you not go to Los Corrales once in a while and spend $12? These people penny pinch until they make me sick, but then I retire with $80 million in the bank. Well, this guy here kept these cars and all this time and said, okay, I'm going to retire. I'm going to sell the cars. And boy, did he retire. Now, I don't know what kind of bank account he had anyway after 50 years in the car business, but he dang sure did really well. Tebow was even learning how to steal him by 1958. All right, let's see. I think I'm going to take a little break here. And we still got a lot of stuff to go over. Some of it's pretty darn interesting. So, and by the way, we're still arguing a little bit with Amy, trying to get her to come back on and do some semblance of a show. And, you know, some of you had talked about, express some remorse, or not remorse, but anyway, wanting to see her come back. So I'm doing my best to talk her into that. We'll see what happens. But at any rate, I'm going to go ahead and stop talking right now.
I'll be back.
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, you good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. I'm just out off about San Antonio with the radio blastin' and the bird dog gone. Let me travel my head sound the town, but no local yoga gonna shut me down. Me and my boy got the trigger wound, and we'll come a thousand miles from a guitar jam.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown, I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
Baby.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, let's finish this up. We still got a lot of stuff to talk about here. Let's start in Houston, Texas. This was about 3 days ago. Houston police officer, and it doesn't say TSA or security guard, no, it was a cop. Accidentally fired his AR-15 into the floor of the baggage area at Hobby Airport. This was last Thursday, actually. Said the on-duty officer was patrolling the airport when the semi-automatic rifle went off. No, you guys don't listen to this show enough. Guns don't just go off. They never, well, there's one incident that we know of. But typically they don't just go off. Now I have to wonder also, I know that he's a police officer, and I'm not even going to pretend like they are better trained than anybody else, but what are their rules for carrying around in the chamber on a rifle? I don't care where you're at. And I think Doc and several of the rest of you can verify this. Even in, you know, Vietnam or Afghanistan or wherever, people don't walk around camp with round in the chamber. And as they did this at Bundy Ranch, and I was vehemently opposed to this. I am just grateful that nothing happened, but I'm surprised at the same time. But usually a rifle engagement is not a fast draw type scenario, generally. If the rifle, now the handgun having a round in the chamber, that's different. It's in a holster. It's the trigger guard is covered. And there's just no way for it to accidentally, for, you know, safety to be disengaged and trigger activated and all that stuff when it's protected like that. A rifle doesn't typically have that kind of protection unless it's carried in a scabbard of some kind, which is pretty rare. So through the course of the day, if you're not very diligent and monotonously check the safety, you know, when I'm carrying a rifle around, I can't even begin to tell you how many times an hour that I check the safety. When I'm walking around in the woods, if it's a bolt, if it's anything with an internal hammer, if it's a bolt action, if it's a pump, if it's a semi-auto, I typically don't carry around in the chamber unless I feel like something is about to happen or about to get into a pack of coyotes or there's an elk right over the hill or something like that. I don't usually carry one in the chamber. Walking around inside a building, I would not under any circumstances have one in the chamber unless I had been notified that there is a potential active shooter situation, then maybe I would go ahead and chamber around. So I don't understand why this happened to start with. He said three airport employees and two civilians were in the baggage area when the rifle fired and no one was hurt. So that's a very good thing. But it doesn't just happen in America. Happens in France. This was, when was this? Well, I don't see the date on it here. It probably is on the video, so. But, there it is. This was about a year ago. I gotta read you this. my French is not too good, so when it comes to these names and stuff, just pretend like you know what I'm talking about. At least two people have been injured after a gun was accidentally fired during a speech by President François Hollande. Hollande was speaking in the town of, in this town in central France, to mark the opening of a high-speed railway between Paris and Bordeaux. When a police marksman accidentally opened fire. Okay. That's what the newspaper said. A police marksman accidentally opened fire. The paper quoted local officials as saying the member of the elite, Doc, you may know what this is. Mimi would know if she was there. Gendarmerie. Anyway, the elite protection squad. This is a member of the elite protection squad charged with protecting the president. Was positioned on a rooftop about 100 meters from the marquee where the ceremony was taking place. The safety catch on the officer's rifle was reportedly off, and the shot was fired when he tripped while adjusting his position.
So, how safe does that president feel when he knows that there's a guy on the rooftop 100 yards away watching through a scope with the ground in the chamber and a safety off? Did I mention a while ago, I don't know how many times in an hour, probably in a minute, that I check the safety when I'm walking through the woods when I have a round chamber. I don't worry about it too much on a 30-30 with an external hammer, with a lever action, or something with an external hammer. I'm not too concerned about it. I put the hammer in the safety position, the half-cock notch, or whatever you want to call it, and they're at rest, and I consider that to be safe. But, as I said, anything with an internal hammer is checked with monotonous regularity.
The bullet pierced the marquee roof. I can't believe his safety kits reportedly off, and the shot was fired when he tripped while adjusting his position. The bullet pierced the marquee roof, hitting a waiter in the leg and a rail employee in the foot. You know, with that many people in the building, it's amazing to me that he didn't go right in the top of somebody's head. Somehow, this bullet went in and hit the floor via two people's leg and foot. There are unconfirmed local media reports that the sniper had shot himself in the foot and could be seen hopping up and down. Oh, by the way, did I mention that this guy is on the elite protection squad charged with protecting the president? Boy, we needed some of those kind of guys when Obama was president, huh? Just saying. Oh, why stop there? Let's go to Washington. Bainbridge, North Kitsap County. Rifle fire. This was... The story is in May of this year. I think the incident happened a little while before that, but Bainbridge officer's rifle fired in a casino, and chief wants to know why. I'd want to know why, too. Investigators are trying to determine why a Bainbridge Island police officer's rifle inadvertently fired last month inside the Clearwater Casino, while he was hurrying to an emergency backup call. No one was injured in the incident, and the officer reported the rifle was pointed toward the floor, the safety was activated, and his finger was off the trigger. Right, that's what they all say. It was on safety, and I wasn't even touching the trigger, it just went off. Okay, it's your story, you can tell it however you want to. Described the rifle as an AR-style semi-automatic rifle. The Washington State Patrol Crime Lab inspected the gun, could find no evidence of something wrong with it. Now it is being analyzed by the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office, which is conducting an investigation there, blah, blah, blah.
I want to get to the bottom of this, and regardless of the findings, the weapon will not be used again. This is very disconcerting to me, as it damn sure ought to be. Hamner said the Bainbridge Island officer had to prepare for the worst, which is why he was hurrying and armed with a rifle. When citizens are calling for officers, it is an indication it really, really isn't going well. The officer was not placed on administrative leave because no misconduct was alleged. I want to know what the cause is, so make sure it never happens again.
I don't care what they determined the cause was. I would put this officer through a little bit of remedial training. You know, he doesn't have to, nobody was hurt. It was pointed evidently in the safe direction. You know, it was one of those moments, lucky moment, training moment. But I'd still put him through, a half a day of remedial safety training or something like that.
Staying on top of it, Can't get my words together here. Let's see. Let me run over here to the chat room and see what's going on. Susie B's joined us. I didn't notice her. Glad you made it. Thank you. The official shooting bench pinup girl, Susie B. Alrighty then. Doc answered my question there. Only chambered weapons outside the bund, whatever that is, on actual patrol. And that's what, there's a place outside of camp where you're, post or whatever, where you typically form up and get any last-minute things together. And at that time, depending on the circumstances and the, where you're at and what your rules of engagement are and all this kind of stuff, that would be where everybody chambers around and adopts this new attitude since you've left camp and you're now changing gears mentally. And okay, now we're playing for real, and there's a possibility. This is the same as it's exactly the same as our dry fire practice, where you go into your dry fire, your dry practice area. You unload the gun, leave all the ammunition outside of the area where you're going to practice. Take your extra magazines out, any loose ammo in your pockets, all that stuff stays in this area. And you tell yourself mentally, because we need to change gears. We've been doing something different all day or for a week or for a month or whatever. So now we're changing gears. We're going to do something entirely different. And we're going to go in and dry practice with the gun. We're going to pull the trigger, activate the hammer, the striker, or whatever, where it could potentially fire if it was loaded. So we're changing gears mentally. We're going to go in there and we're going to do our dry practice for a certain amount of time. We're going to come back out, load the gun, and it's time to change gears yet again. We need to make sure we understand now that we're not dry packing. Matter of fact, we're going to tell ourselves out loud. Once we load the gun and put it back in the holster, we're going to say to ourselves, the gun is loaded, and it is no longer safe to dry practice. Or something along those lines. Something that will help you to mentally change gears. And this is why you stop outside of your camp or your area, your bivouac area or whatever it may be, and you say, okay, let's get loaded up and ready to go. And mentally, you should be changing gears at that point. The NM Glock says, does remedial training include washing toilets with a toothbrush? I don't know if that's such a bad idea. Let me see what's going on here. I've got all kinds of cotton-picking messages coming in here. Let's see what's going on here. All right, we can let that go for the time being. Man, tons of stuff. We're a right popular guy today for some reason.
You know, Doc, if they are actually in condition one, I could almost agree with you. But the thing is safeties get bumped, safeties get forgotten to put on. Yeah, agreed. When the safety's on, round in the chamber, yes. Providing the gun is in good mechanical condition, you're absolutely right. They are safe. However, people forget to put the safeties on sometimes. People forget, they brush the safety off on something around gear or, you know, whatever. And they don't check it often enough. And there are every bit as many. Matter of fact, front sight has proven that there are more accidents happen with 1911s than with Glocks. 1911s and SIGs took the prize for the most negligent discharges. Okay, berm. Gotcha, Doc. Now I know what you're talking about. I wondered if it was something like that. Copper, yeah. Yeah, you must have watched, what was the name of that show? The Kingdom? It's in law enforcement, we call that a clue. That was a great show. Language was horrible in it, but it was a great show anyway. All right, let's see. That was, he did see that movie. I know that's where that came from. That was a dang good show. I loved it. All right, let's see. I'm going to try to hit something else here real quick. Oh, one more thing. I've got several more things I need to do, but maybe I can catch up here. Oh, real quick. There's a mayor in Louisiana. This is in Kenner, Louisiana. If Mimi was with us, she would, she know where Kenner. The mayor there has prohibited any Nike purchases for recreational programs. There's also a college here, more than one actually. There's a couple more come in today. One of them is Liberty College from somewhere. This is, let's see. What is the name of this college? Anyway, this college has removed uniforms featuring the Nike logo to protest Kaepernick's, New Deal here. It is College of the Ozarks, Point Lookout, Missouri. And I saw some other, there are several others today, so I'm wondering if Nike has yet decided that they have made a mistake. I'm going to have to run over a little bit because there's a couple more stories I want to go over. This is another one here where this is a person, Beto O'Rourke, running against Ted Cruz. His campaign is requested. This blows me away. This is at a VFW hall. They have requested that the VFW take down all American flags before his rally there. Color me speechless. At a VFW hall, really? Who in the hell are you? There's the commander there. He said, I don't normally attend rental events, but I attended Saturday to make sure things ran smoothly. This is the commander. He decided to go. You know, usually when somebody, you know, it's a gun show or it's a rally, it's a whatever, the commander doesn't usually go just because he's got bigger and better things to do, like barbecue with the neighbors or whatever. But he decided, well, I'll go just to make sure everything goes well, considering, you know, what's going on here. So he noted that there were only two requests that he would not allow at the VFW. They wanted to open the doors to the flight deck lounge, and I couldn't allow that, and they wanted to take flags down. I didn't only say no. I said, hell no. You don't take the flags off the wall. I can't believe any American would ask us to do that. I don't know why he wanted them down. or what he was going to put up instead. So I'm hoping that there's enough people out there that have noticed this and say, what, are you kidding me? I think maybe we don't want you instead of Ted Cruz right now. So I don't need to go into great details on this one, but here's a guy that had beheaded his girlfriend in front of a three-year-old girl. He said that the Lord told him to do it. God told him, and he recited. So he said, "I'm not crazy. If I was crazy, I wouldn't tell you the truth. Truth is, I was commanded by the Lord because she wouldn't repent to take her out." And he recited some passages in the Bible that backed that up. And anyway, he was arrested, and he's like $40 million bond or whatever it is. Here's another one. The food truck owner in Detroit has refused
the food truck, the roach coach, the maggot wagon, they call it. Little truck sits on the side of the road around lunchtime, comes to the jobs and stuff. They said they're refusing to sell to law enforcement. Okay, I understand that they have a right to do that. If I don't like it, I don't agree, it infuriates me, as a matter of fact. But I'd say, okay, you asked for it, you got it. I would put them in a database. Everyone that does stuff like that, I put them in a database, and they say, 911 call, come to this and this address. Oh, never mind. I didn't see your sign. You got a little note beside your name here that you refuse to serve law enforcement. So, it's only fair that we refuse to serve you. Do the best you can. Let us know how it turns out.
That would be my suggestion there. Okay, last thing. We're not running over too awful much here. Sorry, DeTinker. I have intentionally saved this one for last. I have so many times, not every show, but usually is at least once a week, and this has gone on for over 10 years. Well over 10 years, over 12 years now. About a cop who has accidentally shot someone or has shot someone on purpose, and it was, you know, someone unarmed or wrong person or wrong information or, you know, any number of things happened that if a civilian had done it, they would automatically go to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Do not go to court. Just put them under the jail, throw away the key, and we don't ever want to see them again. That's what usually happens. But with a cop, all I got is I feared for my life. And that's it. Okay, case dismissed. Thank you for your service. Well,
here's this one is a little bit different. If this would have happened to a civilian, they'd have probably hung him in Times Square. This is a Dallas police officer, fatally shot a man. The officer was a female. Dallas police officer fatally shot a man after she accidentally entered his apartment thinking that it was her own. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to enter your house. Let me kill you because you're here. You shouldn't be, because this ought to be my house. This is the one that I was going to rent. Whatever, I don't know. According to news relief, the unnamed female officer called dispatch to report that she had been involved in a shooting at her apartment complex on Thursday. The release said that the unnamed officer, we'll see how long that lasts, returned to her complex in full uniform after working a full shift. The officer reportedly told responding officers that she'd accidentally entered the victim's apartment thinking it was hers.
Authorities did not state how they believed the confusion of apartments occurred, nor what went on when the officer encountered the apartment's rightful tenant. Now, let me stop there just a minute. I've said
this numerous times in CCW classes and actually in most of my classes, and I've said it here on the show a few times,
that when you live in a duplex or condo apartments, motel rooms, stuff like that, where everything looks the same. You know, I told you the story about the guy I almost shot one night when I was living in an apartment in Houston. The guy didn't know. He come upstairs, so he just took the wrong stairs. It looked just like his door, same color, same number of stairs, everything faced the same direction, but it was my apartment. That's when I learned right there, not because I'm scared, but because I understand that mistakes happen, is that's when I started locking the doors. I come so close. I mean, this guy was wasted. He was, you know, some hippie. But nevertheless, he didn't deserve to be killed. And he has no idea how close he came, because I was holding a single-action Ruger Blackhawk with about a 2.5-pound trigger. Gun was cocked, and it was right on his upper torso, head, shoulder area as he fell through the door. And I've told you before, why I didn't shoot him, I have no earthly idea. But the potential was there. I'm going to have to assume that the Lord was watching over me. And that's when I decided that locking the door under those circumstances was a very, very good idea to prevent something catastrophic from happening like that. So, at some point, the officer fired her weapon, striking the victim. Responding officers administered aid at the scene. Despite treatment, the victim, later identified as Botham Shem John, or Jean, or whatever, was pronounced dead at the hospital. Female officer was not injured. The Dallas Police Department placed the officer on administrative leave pending a joint investigation between the department and the district attorney's office. What did the police say? During a Friday news conference, Sergeant Warren Mitchell of the Dallas Police Department refused to answer whether the female officer believed John or Jean or whatever was actually an intruder in her apartment. He said the department hadn't even interviewed the female officer at the time of the conference. The victim was a native of St. Lucia, graduate of Harding University in Arkansas, where he was a former morning worship leader during morning chapel services. Tracy Moore, a preacher who knew this guy from the church, told him that John was a powerful singer, and blah, blah. Great guy, loved to smile, positive leader, everybody loved him. Isn't that always the case? Investigation is ongoing. I'm not convinced that there needs to be much of an investigation. Now, the least... that I would downgrade this to is involuntary manslaughter, negligent homicide. But that it would be, the investigation should have been over that night. I don't see, the only thing I could see is if somebody pulled a dirty trick and changed the numbers on the doors or something like that. Now, obviously, the guy didn't have his door locked, or either that or her key opened his door, too. There's hanky-panky going on there, maybe. That seems like that should have been cut and dry and over with an hour after it happened. So, anyway, I am curious to see what happens with this female cop here. That the, you know, back then, Doc, you say you prefer semi-autos for social work. Well,
this was back in the mid-70s. I didn't have complete confidence And a lot of the Simmons at that time, I think I believe I had a 1911 at that time. And I had a, what was it, Smith & Wesson 59. Pretty good gun, pretty reliable, shot well. But I just, you know as well as anybody, 40 years ago, we were just coming out of that time when, cops didn't want to carry semi-automatic, so they just weren't 100% convinced that they were something they could trust their life to. That was about the transition period, and then we got into the 80s and started seeing, different types of guns coming out and people's different lubes and different ammo and a lot of different things happened and different gun designs, and we started getting our confidence up, substantially. But in the 70s, I just wasn't there yet. And my gun that I trusted more than anything was a Security 6 in .357 Magnum. But the gun I just happened to have laying on the nightstand while I was watching TV that night was a Blackhawk. And now then, I have pretty much gotten rid of all my single action except for one. I have a Ruger Single 6, a convertible. 22 Magnum, and that's the only single action I have left. I have two double actions left. I have my little TARS 85, a little 38, and a GP 100, and those are the only two double action handguns I have left.
Okay, well, we've managed to go 12 minutes over here, so hopefully the Tinker will forgive me for getting into messing up his archives here. But I'll tell you what's fixing to happen here. We're just a couple of days away from heading out to Colorado Springs, Pueblo area, and for our Personal Defense Handgun 3 class up there. And by the way, people have asked about Liberty Lounge. Liberty Lounge will be a happening thing this Friday, and I will have a special guest on with me that night. See if I can get this right here. There we go. So, unless something dramatic happens, something catastrophic and ugly, then Liberty Lounge will be brought to you live and in Technicolor from Pueblo, Colorado, or thereabouts, this coming Friday. That will be the first day of our personal defense handgun class. The next one will be on Saturday. Saturday night will be our night class. Sunday we'll wrap it up, and Monday I'll be headed home. Let's see here. All right, there we go. And I told you survival tabs are on the way. Some of you have probably received them already. Everyone should have them before the end of this week. So, and for those of you that are getting them directly from me, I should also have mine before the end of the week, and I'll get you taken care of here just as quick as I can. So, you guys have a... Doc, one of these days I'd like to do that. Doc says, on the way to Colorado, feel free to swing by Mississippi. Well, that's kind of like
Waylon Jennings said. He was, what did he say in that song? Going from Dallas to Austin by way of San Antonio or something like that. That'd be kind of like that. But anyway.
All right, I got to get on out of here. Thank you guys for putting up with me here for a little overtime. And I will see you Wednesday night. Good night.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.